right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 62 of the Double ETF podcast. I hope you guys are doing great. So tonight, for the first time in a while, we're going to do what we watched, but only movies, because we have a few months to catch up on. And no one wants a four-hour episode. So let's get on with it. With me tonight, I have Hector Contreras. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Speak for yourself. I'll do a four-hour episode. We can talk about one movie for an hour.
Okay.
Maybe.
Well, let's start with one, and then we'll see how things go.
Good call.
Welcome back. We also have back one of the regulars, Woody Meacham. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Hey, everybody.
Hi. Also here tonight, we have Mike Drew. Hello.
Hello. Greetings from a very cold Southern Ontario.
Hanging there. And it's spring, by the way.
It's supposed to be.
Yes, supposed to be.
Apparently. I don't think anybody's told Mother Nature yet. So.
Yep. Not yet. Hanging there. And we also have Nick Bamback. How are you?
I'm good. I'm in sunny Texas, so I feel bad for you and Drew.
Well, it's not too late to kick you out of the conversation.
Well, I mean, you know, the night's still young.
Oh, and we've lost Nick.
We lost Nick. Oh, Jesus.
I want the 4-hour Killers of the Flower Moon episode that, you know, we're going to have tonight, right? Right, Patrick? No, I'm kidding.
But actually, I was considering maybe one of these days try to do a watch along of a movie. I don't know which one.
Hopefully it's not one of the ones I watched.
I don't know how the logistics would work. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it would turn into chaos even more, like maybe a pseudo riff tracks or something. I don't know, but we will figure it out.
It has to be a bad movie.
I got some.
Yeah, we have some tonight for sure.
Oh, I got a good one then. I'm going to talk about it today if you want to do it.
Oh boy.
Okay. Awesome. So let's get on with it. Let's start with Hector. Just tell us what you have for us.
Okay, so let's do Lisa Frankenstein. Lisa Frankenstein takes on a story of basically, it's like a comedy version of, it's more like a zombie movie than it is a Frankenstein movie, but I guess it kind of makes sense. But anybody see the trailer? It's a teen girl that she's basically kind of got a Cinderella story where she's just nobody really wants to be around her, and she just feels like she's got a very much of a loser complex. And then she meets this, spoiler alert, she meets a guy that she's kind of seen and he comes to life, and he's a zombie from, I forget when, what part of the century, probably the early part of the 1800s, I don't know. He comes back to life for her, and things go not as according to plan, which is just a tale of a kind of a murder love story, very much in the vein of like a Heathers, but with a zombie / Frankenstein.
Mm. Same tone?
Dark comedy, yeah.
Okay.
But I did not love it. I even rewatched Heathers, and that didn't age as well as I remembered it. But Lisa Frankenstein is, I think it tried to go for like that quirky teen comedy guffaws. It just didn't, I don't know, it just didn't land with me. I didn't think it was as funny as it wanted to be.
It's Robin Williams' daughter is involved with it somehow. She's either director or writer or both.
She's a director.
Because I've only heard of it, but I know nothing about it. Is anyone well-known in it, or?
The mom is played by Carla Gugino, or Gugino, I can't pronounce it.
Okay.
But other than that, no.
The zombie is one of the Sprouse boys.
Oh, yeah.
The Sprouse twins from Zack and Cody, The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody back in the day.
Yeah.
I saw that too, Hector. It was kind of disappointing. I think my problem with the movie is it was trying too hard to be funny.
Oh, way too hard.
I feel like that was my problem with like certain comedies now, where I feel like comedy should come naturally, and it's just trying way too hard to be edgy and humorous, and it has a PG-13 rating, so it can only go to a certain extent without, you know, crossing the line to an R rating.
Right.
But to me, it just sort of was disappointing. I know some people like it, but I did want to give a shout out to 80s Lisa. Because I texted her when I was in the theater, because the title character's name is Lisa, but also there's a Bauhaus poster in the title character's bedroom. So I said, was this you in 1989? And she gave me a lot of heart emojis.
And no one gave you any shit from texting during the movie?
I was the only person in the theater.
Oh, shit. Okay.
It's like a private screening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. Jesus.
A private screening just for me.
Perfect. All right, Hector, what do you have next?
Well, that leads me into my other one, because they kind of go similarly hand in hand, and that's Driveaway Dolls.
Hmm.
And the reason I say that it goes hand in hand is just it tries too hard to be funny in the same very like teen or post-teen, maybe in their early 20s. It's one of those ones that, and this is a Coen Brother, I don't remember.
Coen Brother
vehicle. They seem to have fallen off the map a little bit in terms of these last couple movies just haven't really done much for me. Again, going to say that Raising Arizona is in my top 10 favorite films of all time. So I don't know how they've gotten so far off course with their movies. Maybe just because they're not working together. I don't know. This is a road comedy. There's two girls that, unbeknownst to them, have some sort of thing in their trunk that they don't know about that is worth a lot of money to some gangsters. And so the gangsters are following them while the down going from New York or wherever they are to Florida. So it is a road comedy in the vein of just like they're two girls that are trying to make a new life for themselves down in Florida. And meanwhile, they're being chased by two or three gangsters trying to get what's in the trunk. And it, you know, comedy, quote unquote, ensues. But I just didn't laugh at any jokes. It just wasn't funny to me. I think it just, again, trying too hard, like the Frankenstein movie where everything was, I think it was supposed to be quirky comedy because of the way that they talk. The main actress thinks she's Miley Cyrus. The other actress is a wet blanket. That's their characters, where they're written, but they just, it's not entertaining to me. For whatever reason, didn't hit. For someone else, it would, but yeah.
Was it the first solo effort by one of the Coen?
Ethan Coen, is it?
Ethan Coen is the director and writer of this movie. And we know who the talented Coen brother is, because right? I saw this too. Jeez. And I was by myself again at the screening.
So I have a question about that. Hector, did you see them at the theaters?
Yeah.
Were they busy?
No. In fact, I was the only one at Driveaway Dolls.
So if laughter is contagious, do you think that sometimes if we see a film that maybe isn't that great, but other people are laughing, you tend to laugh more?
You know, that's a great question. Generally, no. I wouldn't say that's like a definitive, but I saw Rushmore with three other people. I was laughing the whole time, and they even had an old couple who was there not laughing and made it an effort not to laugh, looked at me while I was laughing as if to be in shock that I was enjoying the movie. Generally, we'll just react to it normally, but it's probable. I mean, I don't think I would have been entertained, but like I saw The Strangers with a packed house and it was all college age or early 20s and they were chewing it up. I think they were more entertaining than the movie itself. So I don't know. A packed house really does help things generally, but I'll still enjoy it if I'm by myself, or not enjoy it, like I've done with several other movies.
And I'm sorry, Hector, but Margaret Qualley's character, though you said sounds like Miley Cyrus, she sounded like Sandy the Squirrel from SpongeBob. In all seriousness, it was so bad, so bad.
Yeah, she was trying to channel her inner Miley in that performance, and like and then it was weirder. Because, well, I'm not going to spoil it, but something else happens and I'm like, oh, the connection is there. I see. Okay.
All right.
Anyway, sorry. Okay. So a couple more. Then I'll split the diff here with the Dune Part 2, which I did really enjoy. This continuation of Dune. I'm not going to get into a story about it. You see Dune Part 1, you get Dune Part 2. I liked it more than Dune Part 1. It's like they saved a lot of the best parts for this one and a lot of setup with the first one to make this second one more entertaining.
Have you read the books?
I have read the first book back in high school.
Okay.
So I have not read it since. My wife is a huge fan. She has all the books, including the Brian Herbert, who is the son. She has all his books too.
My condolences.
Oh yeah. She's a big her. She's like mid 20th century sci-fi geek. She loves the H.G. Wells. She loves her favorite book is the Foundation trilogy.
Oh, wow.
She's an old school sci-fi. So these Dune books are like embedded in her brain. Like she knows all the material, but we had to see it separately because of the kids. So I went and then she went a couple days later. She loved it too. There are minor changes, but I think they actually work for the better as opposed to the book. There are certain things in the book that don't work nowadays and that this works a little better.
Yeah. I mean, without going into spoilers, I saw it as well. I really liked it. I'm still not sure if I preferred part one or part two. There is more action in part two, but I don't like, okay, not really spoilerish, but I don't like what they did with
it's been out for 2 months. You're not going to spoil it.
No, okay. But like, I don't like what they did with Javier Bardem's character. He's too much comic relief in this one.
He does have a few quips, doesn't he?
I get how he switches to, you know, like fanatic almost. But I felt like he overdid it a little bit. I get comic relief, that's fine. But yeah. I felt there was a little too much of it. Besides that, it's awesome. It's absolutely great.
It's one of the most beautiful movies I've seen ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
The production design, the shooting is fantastic, especially when they go to the... So I've never read the books. My only reference is the 84 movie or 87 or whatever.
Yeah, 84.
And that one we used to watch as a joke, just about how, you know, when he'd go, oh, my emperor with his lovely, or not the emperor, but my lovely diseases and da-da-da-da-da. We used to make fun of that. But this one was so good. And when they go to that other world where Austin Butler's character fights in the,
yes,
the Colosseum, where with that dark, like the dark chemical fireworks type thing. I thought that was brilliant.
Now, did you see it in a movie theater, Woody?
Yeah.
The original one? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, no, not the original. No, the original one I watched on videotape.
Oh, okay. Because my cousin went, I was too young, and my cousin went, and I remember him telling me that when he left the theater, they passed out a pamphlet that had basically like every...
I heard about that.
To explain like what each word meant, because if you didn't read the book, you had no idea what the hell you were... You know, what was going on.
No, I definitely remember that. I just never went to the theater.
Okay. I think it does a good job at making it a Hollywood movie without stupefying it in any way. You know, it's solid. It's a good movie.
Yes.
The next one on my list is Madame Web. Now, you're probably wondering why.
I have thoughts.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Wow. this was just a time killer. But yeah, I could have done so much with my time. Oh God. Wow. Yeah. Madame Web was rough, to say the least. It's flashy and some of the CGI is good. Some of it is shit. Some of it is good. Some is shit.
Sometimes it may be good. Sometimes it may be shit.
Yeah. The story was just all over the place. The performances were all over the place, mostly not good. You know, the fact that the actresses are not like endorsing the film makes sense, because I think word got out really quick that the fans were like not digging it. So it makes sense that they're just gonna at this point just
probably the strangest press tour I've ever heard of.
Right? It's bad. You know, we were talking about. Oh gosh, what's the Samuel Jackson show he's doing for Marvel, and how it was just very by the numbers?
Secret Invasion?
Secret Invasion.
Yeah, and you know how that just felt very by the numbers, and This is even worse than that, where they just plugged in to AI, said, give me a Marvel script, and they tried to do their own version of a Marvel script, Sony.
Ouch.
It just failed in so many levels. Yeah, do not recommend that one. And then I saw Ricky Stenicki. Hmm. Ricky Stenicki is pretty good. It falls right in the middle. It's a good comedy. It kind of brings you to that late 90s, early 2000s, you know, post-swingers, like just raunchy bro comedy. There's some good jokes in there. John Cena plays the title character. It's worth a watch.
That's Amazon Prime, right?
That's on Amazon Prime, yeah.
Because I was going to watch that. It looked to me to be more Hangover-ish than Swingers.
I would say even it's more... I want to say American Pie. I mean, it's Zac Efron and his buddies, so they're all that age. It's not.
Is it, well, because it was kind of like when they had Tag a few years ago.
Yeah.
Think of Tag. Think that's a good barometer.
Okay.
It's fine. It's just a good movie to, you know, just sit and pay your bills to.
Well, that's quite the endorsement.
Right? Like, sometimes you just need escapism. That's a good escapism movie. So, yeah. Especially after all the Oscar movies we watched. So I'll give a middle thumbs up to Ricky Stenicki. And then the last one I watched was Roadhouse.
Yes.
Yep. All right.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy. Now, keep in mind, I hadn't seen the 80s one in a long time. It's probably been a few years. I rewatched most of it maybe 2 years ago. And I was like, okay, got it. I don't need to finish it. Remembered it well enough. So the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, good Lord, this is like a Van Damme movie. And I'm like, oh my God, no, it's not. This is like Roadhouse. I was watching the same plot. And I was like, why am I complaining? Like, why do I hate this and not shit on the Patrick Swayze one?
Oh, it's not though. But to me, no, I saw it too last night. We watched it last night and I'm just keep going, but oh.
Yeah.
It is bad. And I'm like, why do I hate this and not, you know, it's the same plot to Van Damme movies. Like half of the Van Damme movies are the same exact plot. And I'm like, well, those just got borrowed from the 80s from Roadhouse. So it's the same. It's not, if you were to put it on paper, it's the same movie, but they change it in a very fast and furious, flashy, the jokes didn't work for me. I don't know. It's mostly Jake Gyllenhaal's fault. He wants to be Van Damme, but he's still Jake Gyllenhaal. So he's still trying to put on some sort of acting performance, but he's got nothing to work with. So
I just want to make you laugh, Hector. You compared the last movie to Swingers, and that director of Roadhouse is the director of Swingers.
Doug Liman. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
That's probably why it's been on my head.
And he did really good movies like The Bourne Identity and Mr. Smith and
Go was Go. Yeah. Amazing. And Edge of Tomorrow as well.
Edge of Tomorrow is a great movie.
That's a great, yeah.
I don't know if it's all Gyllenhaal's fault, but it's like every decision that was made was the wrong one. Like, if we can talk about the old one for a few seconds, the old one was both the best movie ever and the worst movie ever at the same time. And
yeah,
agreed.
In the same scene sometimes. It was like a Schrödinger's movie. Both shit and great at the same time.
What movie are you ever going to get someone that says, I used to fuck people like you in prison?
Yeah, also that. And the thing is, Patrick Swayze was a better character because you had the philosophy thing and the fighting thing in the same person. And I don't know, like it made for a more interesting character. And we don't have that with this version.
It started off so good. Like the first 5 minutes, he's like, you know, you set up this Stallone-ish type character where everyone just say, oh, you know, the legacy of this guy, you know, it's a very mystery about him. And then there's nothing. He's just
Post Malone out of nowhere.
I know that. I thought that was so wild because I literally looked at my wife. I'm like, do you know who that is? She goes, no. I'm like, fucking Post Malone.
Yeah,
that's crazy. And also, I wrote down a couple of things. I thought the fights sucked.
Yeah,
honestly.
And then you have a rotating camera, like Matrix style, going around.
Well, hold on. Yeah. Listen, the CGI is the important part, though.
Yeah, but the CGI didn't help at all, I thought. And Conor McGregor sucks.
Oh God!
Yes, he does.
As a person and as an actor, absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
And, I underlined one word. As opposed to the old one, I felt that this one could be summarized almost in one word, charmless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The old one had a certain charm.
Yep.
A little something to it.
I will agree with that for sure.
Very flawed movie, of course, but there was a little something to it.
Yeah, because, you know, you have that 80s montage, and this, and Patrick Swayze is such a charming actor. Yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal is just flat, just nothing from him.
I'd say that most of the time he is good. Like in Prisoners, he was awesome. In Nightcrawler, he was awesome.
In Source Code, he's good in that too, right?
Yes, and Nocturnal Animals as well. But in this one, I don't know, bad decisions, I guess.
All around.
But I cannot blame him on his physical training because he is jacked. Something fierce.
So I have a theory on Jake Gyllenhaal for a sec. I always think he's like a good actor, but I think he takes a lot of things below his caliber. And it's sort of like a pay the bills type of thing. Like, oh, this project is going to go to my beach house, or this project's going to go to this expense. But like, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, you can kind of tell, I don't know about you guys, when an actor, actress has like their heart in a project. But I feel like he kind of, you can tell when he's not really.
Take a paycheck.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Do you have examples of him just going through the motions?
Oh, yeah. There's so many. Like, there's the one that he did a few years ago, the Michael Bay movie.
Ambulance?
Yeah. Like, that's a good example one. And then
there's
just so many examples of where you're just like, what are you doing, man? Like, you are a good actor.
Well, there was some scandal around this one, though, because they told him it was going to be released in theaters, and then Amazon pulled it back and just put it online because he thought that this was going to be his block. From what I read, this was supposed to be his blockbuster, post-COVID blockbuster movie. And then when they pulled it back, which now I can see why, you know, it probably still would have done decent numbers, but it would have been more Madame Webb-ish than I think anything else than that. And then the other comment is he never says pain don't hurt.
Yes.
I mean, I was waiting for that. There was like four times he could have said it.
Same. And there was this one time incredibly flat joke when they were fighting at the end. I don't care if this is spoiler city, this movie shit, everybody should avoid it.
Yep.
Next to the piano, he said something like, the piano is out of tune.
Yeah, this is out of tune.
There's a lot of...
And McGregor says something else, and it was like, what the fuck? You know, cut this joke out, it's shit.
There's a lot they could have cut out.
And the movie is like 2 hours and 3 minutes, I think. Yeah, that's way too long.
Unnecessarily long.
It was long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it mostly could have been cut like the... There's a whole section of the film where one of the characters' dads is involved. And I was like, you could have cut this whole character out of the movie completely.
And, you know, like when Dalton was in the backseat of the police truck and we see the sheriff kind of in the foreground but out of focus, I expected like a world-class cameo.
Yeah.
Like, you know, put Robert De Niro there or something, you know, like just to steal the show for like 2 scenes.
Yeah.
10 minutes screen time and, you know, job done. That would have been
something. It's funny that you said De Niro because he seems to be like the guy that shows
up. Put Sam Elliott as the sheriff.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
Sam Elliott.
There you go.
Yeah.
I made that movie 1,000% better right there.
Yeah.
Well, Patrick, something else that I was going to say, because I haven't seen it yet. I don't know if I want to now after hearing all this, but I know that there was a controversy because of the SAG strike, all the strikes last year. And apparently there's a lawsuit from, I think, the original writer about Amazon using AI voices. You know, the whole controversy about whether they could reuse, I guess, actors' voices in movies. Apparently they did do that in this movie. And there's this whole lawsuit now that's come out. It was in Variety. Let me see if I could get you guys a link. But I'm just fascinated because I don't doubt that for a single second, especially something like Amazon would do.
Like, did they use it to ADR one scene where they couldn't get the person to come back to the recording studio or something?
Yeah. And like background actors and noises and stuff like that. So,
wow. That sucks.
It does.
Is there a house band? Like, obviously, it was Jeff Healy
So that was one of my two things. They had a different band every night.
Yeah.
And if this is supposed to be a place that's in trouble, how are they getting different bands every night? And then the second pet peeve, because, that was my whole thing about when Jeff Healy stops and goes, everybody, this is Dalton. You know, that kind of thing. That was really cool. And that's how, most of us got introduced to Jeff Healy was in that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then the second pet peeve I've got is every morning they were sweeping up broken glass from the night before. And I'm like, no, you would do that the night before. You do that before you go home. So that's me being a barman watching this going, I got problems from the bar operational part of this.
It is complete nonsense how they're even able to stay open after a week with it. Is it just, they showcase it that every single night they're half blowing up the bar. It is ridiculous how much damage they go through. There's no insurance that would accept them.
Right.
They would be paying.
That's true.
And a guy actually yells, bar fight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. What is it? Animal House?
Yeah. Tarski's going to show up and blow chunks of food in your face.
I was really surprised at how bad it was, honestly.
Nick was right. It's Doug Liman involved. Mm. What is he doing there?
That's a good question.
That's the best part of this whole thing is that he was like legitimately mad. He's bad-mouthing the movie, apparently, like on the presses, because he was told that it was going to be in theaters. And then Gyllenhaal's like, no, it was never going to be in theaters. So it's like Madame Web again, deja vu.
We gave that way too much time, you guys. I want to, everybody, we apologize, but don't watch it.
We did. Good point.
Yeah. Sorry. But sometimes it's good to gang up on the movie and vent. Crap all over it. Yeah.
Oh, I had to vent about that one. I've held that one in too long. And then the last thing I saw was Taylor Swift's concert. I don't need to talk about it. The concert movie was great. That's it.
Okay.
All right. Hector, did you get up and dance?
Oh, did I dance at them? No, I was doing a whole bunch of stuff while I was paying bills.
Paying bills.
Paying bills. Yeah. Paying bills.
Exactly. Great minds.
Yep. I wish I had seen it in theater. It seemed like it would have been like another situation where if it was a packed house, it might have even brought it up another notch. But
it was everything.
Just at home, it was nice. So,
thank you, Hector. Woody, what do you have?
All right. So, covered a couple already, so I'm going to skip those. All right. I'm going to start out with, I went to see Poor Things in the theater. Mm. And I got about 15 minutes into that thing and was like, what the hell is this movie? And I got up and left.
Oh, wow.
Now, what was the last movie you walked out of?
Before that, I can't remember. I don't think I've ever done that.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, I haven't walked out a movie.
But so I got time. Up, I walked out, and I went into Argyle.
Oh my God, what the fuck?
I didn't know anything about it other than it was supposed to be a spy movie kind of thing. I really liked it. And I know some people are going to shit on it. I didn't know it was a Matthew Vaughn movie.
Okay.
And I'm watching it the whole time going, man, this is like Kingsman. And then to find out at the end, it's a Matthew Vaughn movie. I really enjoyed it. I love that stupid shit. I just, the goofiness of what it was. And I mean, it's got Sam Rockwell, for crying out loud. How can you not like Sam Rockwell?
Well,
he's awesome. Bryce Dallas Howard as an action hero was something I never, ever expected. Bryan Cranston, Catherine O'Hara, Dua Lipa, John Cena. And it was just like, wow, this is kind of fun. And I know I'm waiting for Nick to shit on it because I know it's going to happen. but I really enjoyed it. And then when they tie it off at the end, because again, spoiler, but if you watch it, who cares? It is a tie-in to the whole Kingsman universe. So I could see him keeping going with it. But I really thought it was fun. And it was just one of those, didn't know anything, walked in, and it was cool. So I'm going to sit back and let Nick shit on it now.
So I'm going to tell you, Woody, I was laughing because I don't think I've ever heard, in a sense, I left Poor Things to go to Argyle. That's usually the other way around.
Yes.
Because I will say, though, I've seen the trailer for Argyle probably 3 dozen times in the last probably like 4 or 5 months. So I wonder who the fuck Argyle was at this point, because I was like, who is it? And it's not bad. It's just very mediocre. And everyone just looks so bored, and it's, why is it 2.5 hours? And the plot twist, it's like, okay, fine, but it's not as bad as other people are making it out to be, but it's also just not good either.
Apparently it's better than Poor Things to Woody.
Yeah, because then I ended up watching Poor Things, and Poor Things sucks.
Oh,
no, it doesn't.
That movie was so good.
No,
that
you
was
guys talked least... about it. I had to miss that because I couldn't talk.
Did you at least like Mark Ruffalo? Because I think he had some great one-liners out of nowhere.
Yeah, no. We're not talking about Poor Things. No, I'm not letting you
go. Oh, all right.
Why not? You cannot do that. Like, you shit all over Poor Things. Like, no, you're done. We're done.
I'm calling Armistice.
Emma Stone's performance, yes. It's so good. Like, she deserved her second Oscar.
Oh, no,
like,
no. She was great. The movie sucked. It looked great.
Do you like other Yorgos Lanthimos movies, though? Like The Favorite or...
The Lobster.
Yeah.
Kill Under the Sacred Deer. Did you like those, Woody, out of curiosity?
I haven't seen any of them, so no.
Yeah, that explains it then.
Yeah, probably, yes, in part. But honestly, Woody, and I don't mean anything bad by that, but you're the first person to say anything positive about Argyle that I've heard.
Hey,
I'm going to watch it tonight based on your polarizing between the two, three, exactly, or two of you.
It's not great. I'm not saying it's great. I'm just saying
sounds like
fun.
You're saying it's the best movie you've seen in the last decade.
It's the best movie I've seen this year, you guys.
So did you like, I did think the cat was kind of cute. I know people are crapping on the movie, but at least the cat was kind of cute.
Did you like Kingsman?
I loved Kingsman. I loved Golden Circle. I liked The Kingsman.
Okay.
There were three of them? I only saw the first one.
I'm a Vaughn head, maybe?
A Vaughn head. What else did he make?
He did Layer Cake and X-Men First Class.
Oh, Layer Cake.
Mm-hmm. I think that was him. I like those.
Layer Cake was that first pre-Bond when they picked him as Bond because of Layer Cake?
Yes, I think that's it.
To Woody's defense, though, I think people on like Letterboxd and the internet and social media, they really crapped on Argyle. It's not that bad. It's just not great. You know what I'm trying to say, Woody?
If you like Kingsman, you will like this movie.
No, I get that. But I'm saying, like, sometimes people like to just crap on a mediocre movie. And, like, I don't think that's nice either.
You mean like Roadhouse?
So I kind of appreciate that you liked it.
We're not here to be nice, Nick.
Oh, I know.
We're here to shit on everything.
The ship has sailed on that.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
And you don't need nothing but a good time. Woody, I'm going to tell you what you told me in the last episode I was on was love what you love.
Right.
Don't worry what the haters say. Just
exactly.
No, yeah, absolutely. I get that. Absolutely. But it was just an interesting contrast. You know, I hated Poor Things. I really enjoyed Argyle. That's interesting.
That's me in a nutshell, everybody.
Yeah. They are two totally different animals.
All right. Moving on.
Yes.
All right. Next one I've got is Damsel on Netflix.
Which
is
the, man, that's on my list.
I always want to say Billy Bob Thornton. What the hell's her name?
Millie Bobby Brown.
Millie Bobby Brown.
Millie Bobby Brown. There you go.
Yes.
It's a damsel movie, obviously, because that's what it's called. But it was, again, it's on Netflix. Perfect Netflix, Friday, Saturday night movie, sitting on the couch with the wife. It was just a fantasy, had good a couple good twists in it. I thought the CGI for Netflix was pretty good. Good portrayal of a dragon. So I'd recommend that one. I thought it was pretty good for kids, too, because she's only 19, I think, in real life. And so good story about women empowerment and all that type of stuff. I thought it was pretty good. Next one I've got. So I just went and saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire right before we recorded today, right after seeing Pat Francis's post on Facebook about how he shit all over it. I really liked it. I thought it was, I am a kid of the 80s. That was like my high school. And there was enough callback to the old days, new stuff, good twist, but still good, like super bad that they had to fight. They bring in Kumail Nanjiani as kind of a supporting character, and Patton Oswalt is another one that I just really enjoyed it. Did any of you guys see it?
Not yet.
I did. I saw Friday night. It was packed. Pat loves to give us hot takes. We love Pat, but I enjoyed this Ghostbusters. The thing is I don't know what people were expecting going into the movie then, because to me, it, like, when you see Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Ernie Hudson, it evokes nostalgia, right? And I think it had a good balance of trying to introduce these new characters or like recent characters into this familiar territory with these beloved actors and comedians. And I laughed. I thought it was funny. And I mean, I got my money's worth. It's a good popcorn movie.
How does it compare to the previous ones?
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
The other one I liked, I think, a little bit better just because of the whole Harold Ramis thing at the end of it.
Yeah.
That, like, really hit me hard. This one was still, I thought it was good. It wasn't, you know, it
wasn't good as Argyle. I would recommend it.
Pardon me?
It wasn't good as Argyle.
Yeah, on the Argyle scale of filming.
A little better than Argyle, maybe. Yeah, right. I saw it in actually the same theater I saw Argyle in. Maybe that's my theater now, that, you know, the same.
Maybe the drugs that they pumped into the venting system, they were still in there.
Yeah, Theater 7 at the Lake
Ride
Theater.
The snake on Theater 7.
The only problem was there was a bunch of little kids in it. Like little kids, and they were talking the entire time. And there was a woman sitting next to me who was probably my age on Facebook almost the entire time in the movie. Ugh. That I almost lost my shit on. So, but I still enjoyed the movie.
All right. Okay. What else do you have?
All right. Next one I've got is a documentary called The Saint of Second Chances on Netflix. It is about a guy named Mike Veck, whose father was Bill Veck, who was owner of the Chicago White Sox. Mike Veck was kind of his ne'er-do-well son. They shoot it really cool in that they have Mike Veck voicing it over and in the documentary, but they have Charlie Day from Always Sunny in Philadelphia playing him as a young guy in kind of like these callback scenes. And are you guys familiar with Disco Demolition?
Yes.
Okay. Mike Veck did Disco Demolition.
Okay.
So he's the marketing guy behind that. And that basically ruined his career. And so this whole story is about how he went back and was working minor league, just doing marketing for minor league teams all across the country. And then finally he gets called up to when Tampa Bay, the first year of the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, they call him to be their director of marketing. His first event, he sets off fireworks inside the Tropicana Dome. There's no ventilation. So the entire place fills up with smoke.
Not the sharpest tool in the shed, right?
Right. But
yeah.
But it's a whole thing about perseverance. And he names his son Night Train. Night Train Veck is this guy's name. Ugh. Who's also a marketing guy in baseball.
Jason Lee with the Pilot Inspector.
Night Train, like Night Train Lane, the NFL player?
Yeah, the former Lion. But the guy's name is Night Train Veck. I follow him on X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it. But anyway, if you want a good redemption story and you like baseball and you like documentaries, definitely check that out. So that's it.
If I may, do they present him as a good guy?
They present him as real a person that I've ever seen.
Okay.
Meaning it's not, they go both sides of it.
Mm-hmm. Warts and all.
Yeah.
Okay.
and there's a turn in it that I was kind of, I'm like, why are they shooting it this way? They keep telling this part of the story, and I'm like, why are they doing that? And when that pays off, it's heartbreaking. But it is an emotional ride, and it's one of the better things I've seen recently.
So that's on Netflix.
That is on Netflix, yeah. The Saint of Second Chances.
Intriguing.
My last one I saved, this is the one I want us to do a watch along of. So are you guys familiar with the 2008 movie Doomsday?
Yeah.
Yes.
Neil Marshall.
Yeah, I saw it in the theater.
I think. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yes. I don't know who turned me on to that, but what a weird, cool fucking movie. It literally is like six movies in one. It's Contagion. It's Game of Thrones.
I remember they go through a tunnel and all of a sudden it turned into like a Mad Max type of movie.
Right. Like, yep. Like first Mad Max.
And I was like, what the hell? Did I just walk into another theater by accident? Get like, did I go into theater 7 and then this ventilation went off? Is that
right? It was such a cool, like weird,
it's a weird
Saturday
movie.
Afternoon movie that somebody said, oh, you should watch this. And I did. And I was like, oh, this is a perfect, but like one to just bash on because they don't say anything of note in the entire movie. So we could talk all over the whole entire thing and not ruin it.
So bizarre. Yeah. Is that, that's the one he did. Now, Neil Marshall, is that The Descent or am I conflating that with? Okay.
I think so. Yes.
Yes, yeah. He did.
Okay. So yeah, that was like his follow-up, I think, to that movie.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know that.
I think so.
Jesus. The Descent is pretty good in case anyone's wondering.
I think I'm the only person that thinks it's just okay. I think The Descent is okay. A lot of people would put it as their top 10 or top 20 horror movies, but I thought it was okay. That's kind of how I felt about another one that everyone loves. Oh God, I can't remember the one about
The Godfather.
No. Another horror movie. It follows.
Citizen Kane.
I saw It Follows in a theater by myself, and I was expecting to be terrified, but it just kind of left me like, okay, that's all right. And that's another one everyone loves, but I'm only like so about it.
Can't win them all. All right. So Woody, do you have another one? That's it?
Nope. That's it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mike, what do you have for movies?
All right. Since the last time we actually spoke, I've actually watched 5. So I've got all 5.
Woo!
Nobody's mentioned any of them yet, so I'm quite happy. I'm going to start with the worst. So there's a Netflix movie called Lift. It's with Kevin Hart, and it's not very good, and I wouldn't watch it.
Is it about what he wears in his shoes?
Yeah, it's one of those heist movies. You know, I like Kevin Hart, but I found this, other than the scenery and, you know, Vincent, and I always say his last name wrong. What's this? Vincent?
D'Onofrio. Yeah.
He's great. He's kind of a scene stealer, and he's not in it very much, unfortunately, but he's one of the few redeeming qualities about it. Avoid. I don't know. Has anybody seen it?
No.
Yeah. I've just saved you 2 hours. You're welcome.
Thanks. Thank you.
Next, I would go with, so before I got rid of Apple, I watched The Family Plan with Mark Wahlberg. Mm. I liked it more than Lyft. I'm not going to claim it Citizen Kane by any stretch, but it's fun, you know, and especially if you've ever done a road trip with your family. It's, you know, it's silly and...
Is that where he's a spy?
Yeah.
Is he a spy or
former
something?
Former spy.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's a Mark Wahlberg comedy... You know, he's still kind of a badass, but he's also a family man. So it's like, you know, covering a whole bunch of bases at once.
So you're describing me to people. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah. Well, they got to get their inspiration from somewhere. Yeah, I mean, it's a 6.3 rating on IMDb. I'm looking at it right now. That's probably accurate. That is something I would say like, hey, it's raining on a Friday night. You don't have anything to do. You'll get a couple laughs out of it.
And your taxes are done.
And my taxes are done.
Bills are paid.
That's an inside joke there, folks. So that one was all right. I wouldn't get Apple to watch it, you know, when you get your free 30 days when you buy your next iPhone or something, maybe check it out then.
Do you know why you get Apple? So you can watch Slow Horses.
That's right. And Ted Lasso.
And Shrinking.
And there's another comedy returning called... I want to say Expecting, but I think that's wrong. It's really good too. The name will come to me. Self-Reliance. I watched it on Crave up here. Oh, Woody put up his hand for those folks at home. Jake Johnson and Anna Kendrick. Yeah, it was weird. you know, like, look, the questions, I kind of Googled. I didn't know much about it going into it. I liked Jake Johnson. I thought it might be all right. My wife and I watched it. I liked it a lot better than she did. She didn't care for it. I started Googling it and kind of trying to figure out what it was actually about afterwards. And, you know, the term mental health came up a couple times. So I'm assuming it has something to do with that. I struggled to make those links. I can see, kind of, but it's just, it's you know, it's about this guy who gets an opportunity to be in this like live action, I don't know, reality show where he gets $1 million. I think it was $1 million. If he can stay alive for like a month. And there's all these ninjas that are after him. But as long as he's with somebody, they won't come after him. And, you know, his family kind of wonders what's going on. And, you know, he's trying to explain to people what's happening. It was all right. I liked it. I think if you're into enhancements, it might be like the greatest movie ever. I know I usually throw one of those out every podcast where I, you know, but I just, yeah, I liked it. And I think it's one of those movies that other people who are definitely into film and kind of like that quirkiness, they might love it. But I liked it. It was good.
Yeah.
What did you think, Woody?
I had it on my list. I took it off because I was like, it was fine. The connection to mental health is that he's the guy, Jake Johnson's character, is depressed.
Right.
And he's using this as a way, and Anna Kendrick's character is as well. And they're trying to use this as a way to get out of their depression by sparking their life with something that's unusual. That's the mental health connection part.
Without, I mean, I'm going to give a spoiler. So skip ahead 30 or 60 seconds, everybody. Anna Kendrick's character says she's not part of it, right? She just did it for something to do because she saw whatever. I don't know what his logic, if it is something to do with mental health, there were a lot of gaps.
That's partially why she did it as well. She's not actually part of the game.
Okay.
But it got her out of her rut as well, was what they were trying to do with that.
All right.
So
I didn't draw those connections. I didn't make those lines.
Meet, and it was, so. I mean, it's Jake Johnson's first, I think, writing, or it's definitely his first directing gig.
Right.
Where he had it. And I heard him talk about just the opportunity. And it's one of those things, I really, really wanted to like it. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, eh.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. I actually, like I said, I liked it more than my wife did.
Yeah.
I liked it as much as I liked The Family Plan, but just for different reasons. Not to say I loved either. It was just, they were fine. You know, they were okay. One I actually did quite like and that I would recommend is Bank of Dave, which is on Netflix up here in Canada. It's a British movie. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of it. It came out last year. It's based on a true story of a gentleman who, I think in Lancashire, who owns a car dealership or a van dealership, and he's doing quite well. And he's really involved in the community. And he decides to, he wants to open a bank, like a local bank, because people come to him for loans all the time. And the government gets wind of it. And then he ends up having to pay, like, I guess these fines and stuff, because he's not a bank, right? And but he wants to help people out. And so he decides, I'm going to open a bank. And obviously, like, no bank has opened in Great Britain in over like 100 years, right? Because obviously the rules are stacked against everybody. But it's about that and how they do it. And it is based on a true story. Up in Canada, we would call it like a credit union, because the whole premise of the bank that he wants to open is that all the profits go back into the community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if somebody needs a loan to help them get through a dark time or open up a business or something, like, he wanted to be able to do it properly. And it's quite sweet, you know. And again, I'm bringing the sweet movies, right? Like, I'm like, you know, I'm not bringing the movies that are going to make you depressed or whatever. But this is definitely one of them. And I liked it. It was fun. It's not Citizen Kane, but it is a good movie. So I would,
it's not Argyle.
The title of this, the title of this episode is "It's Not Citizen Kane."
That's right.
But no, it's on. I just checked. It's Bank of. It's on Netflix here in the States. It reminds me a lot of the Oscar live short. Barber
of Little Rock.
Little Rock.
Little Rock. Yeah, that one. Same. It feels like the same kind of story.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's kind in it, and you know what I mean. And the banker obviously finds love as he goes into this little town as he leaves, as he comes up from London to help out. It's fun. I liked it. And it's sweet and it's got a nice story to it and stuff. And my final movie, which I only watched last night, is another Netflix movie that just came out this year. It's called Orion and the Dark. It is a DreamWorks, like CGI. It's about a boy who is scared of a few things, the main one being the dark. And Paul Walter Hauser does the voice of it. And he basically goes out with him for the night. And it's actually, the premise is actually very clever. And it takes a real kind of interesting twist at the end. I won't give it away. But, you know, if you're looking for one of those movies that you want to watch with your kids, I think they'll just laugh at the funny slapstick stuff. And, you know, the adults will look a little deeper, like the DreamWorks films, you know, sometimes lend themselves to do. And yeah, I liked it. I would definitely recommend that again for that situation. So
you said it was on Netflix?
Yeah, here anyway.
Okay. Yeah. It is. I just checked it. It's in the States as well.
So what's the title of that last one?
It's called Orion and the Dark. Okay. So Orion is the boy, and the dark is, like his fear. And a pretty interesting premise. Like, I won't give much away here because I think this is something that people could watch and enjoy. And but Paul Walter Hauser, like, I knew the voice right away, and I'm like, why do I know this voice? And then it's him. And there's other people, like Colin Hanks plays, he's in it, it's like his voice is in it too. And I'm sure there's other people that recognize this one, and my wife recognized that one, and you know, so yeah, but I liked it.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Nick, what do you have?
So I've seen a lot of the ones that have been mentioned, but I'll get to some of the ones that haven't. I saw on Valentine's Day, Bob Marley, One Love. That was actually good. And I'm a little biased because I like music biopics. That's just something that I usually gravitate towards too. Documentaries or biopics about musicians. And I thought the actor played it, Kingsley Ben-Adir, I think that's how you pronounce his name. Mm-hmm. I thought he was excellent as Bob Marley. Like, you look at him for a second, you close your eyes and you're like, wow, that looks and sounds just like Bob Marley. I think that it works for the most part. I think sometimes the movie does some awkward flashback moments and it's almost trying to do too much because it essentially takes place in the later half of the 70s because Bob Marley passed away in 1980. And it's trying to connect some of these dots and sometimes it's a little too grandiose. And sometimes a little too, what's the word to use? Like familiar territory of the biopic genre. Like it's trying to do all these like checklist items. But I think all things considered, I thought it was a really good experience. And I actually have a funny story because what he said about Ghostbusters is I was in a screening for that and there was a couple who were making out behind me and they were talking throughout the entire movie. I actually had to move up probably like 4 or 5 rows. And granted, it was a huge theater because I saw one of those.
To get a better
like
view.
Like IMAX.
To get a better view, you wanted to. Never mind.
Yeah,
sorry.
He's filming the makeout session.
Well, they were literally into One Love. They were literally like preaching to the choir with that movie. But no, it was like I couldn't pay attention because they were talking just audibly loud enough to where you can't really pay attention to what's on screen. And I moved up like 5 rows and I couldn't hear them then, but they were totally making out, probably doing some really questionable things in the theater with other people present. Like
everybody call
people.
Atlantis. I feel that there's a song in there somewhere.
You know, Nick, I thought you were going to say that you walked out and went into Argyle.
You're like, this didn't come with my ticket. What happened? What kind of ticket did this guy get? Does the actor sing the songs?
I believe he does.
Wow.
Hmm. I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I think he did.
So he was one of the guys, he was in Barbie as one of the Kens.
Right.
And he was on stage with Ryan Gosling, Simu Liu, and the guy who's playing Doctor Who. All three of those guys, well, the three guys were background Kens to Ryan Gosling on the Oscars and in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
He was also in, if you guys watch Peaky Blinders, he was on that. And also that movie, One Night in Miami, about the hotel with Sam Cooke and Muhammad Ali. He was Malcolm X in that movie.
Okay. Nice.
But yeah, it was really good. I recommend Bob Marley, One Love. It's not a perfect movie, but I thought it was actually really good. And there's a really good Clash reference that's in the movie. So the Clash are my all-time favorite band. I gotta give them a shout out. Next one I saw, which was not good, was Imaginary.
Ew.
Oh my god. So Blumhouse, my god, they gave us masterpieces last year, like Five Nights at Freddy's, and this year with Night Swim.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. This movie. It just, like, I saw it with a friend, and we both just did not like it. It starts out okay, and then it just becomes this overwrought effort that justifies logic, and it's done in such a bland, convoluted way. I don't know. What is with the obsession with, like, bears in horror movies? Like, Cocaine Bear. Chauncey the Bear now in Imaginary. We got the animatronic bears in Five Nights at Freddy's.
Right. Like, Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
I'm trying to Google, like, the last Blumhouse movie that I actually liked, because I'm good. There's a lot.
Megan.
I liked Megan. I didn't love Megan, but I liked Megan enough. But yes, that's probably the best of the bunch. I liked Upgrade. Is that a Blumhouse movie?
I believe so.
All right, I'll put it up.
I feel like that was the real those. Problem. These are what would have gone straight to video, right? And ended up in the video stores in the 80s.
Absolutely, Mike. And it's because horror is just such a reliable audience. Like, people will go see it the first weekend or maybe the second weekend, and then it just goes into, it just goes nowhere after that, usually.
It ends up on Shudder. Which I probably will end up, no, I won't end up seeing that one particularly.
No, but Imaginary sucks.
Yeah.
A few more. Love Lies Bleeding, which was actually a really good movie. I recommend it. It's not perfect, but I have one observation that kind of went viral, like a little viral with my friend groups and online. Ed Harris's character in that movie looks like the Crypt Keeper from Tales from the Crypt. And everyone, like, just died at that, because it's true. Like, he literally does. And I should have really had the meme, like, hee hee hee. But it was a good movie, Love Lies Bleeding. Kristen Stewart, I'm always mixed on as an actress. I think she's good in some things, but I think she's kind of overrated, and she just works with the right people, I think, that I think helps elevate her. I don't think she's inherently a good actress. I know I'm terrible, listeners.
No, I agree.
Like, I just don't know what it is. There's just something about her that I feel like she's just
vapid.
I don't know. Like, her heart's not in it, or she looks bored. And if she looks bored, then I'm probably gonna be bored. It takes place in 1989.
Is that the bodybuilder movie?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, that's the bodybuilder action romance.
Very, very Bound, like the movie Bound.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Bound meets Raising Arizona meets, I don't even want to spoil anything.
All right.
You know, but it's a good movie. And Dave Franco literally gives a jaw-dropping performance. And Ed Harris is also excellent in it. The end is very weird. Like, it's really weird. The movie goes for, like, a gritty realism for, like, almost the entire runtime. And then they do something really goofy towards the end that kind of lost me. But because everything else was so strong before it, I kind of gave it a little bit of a pass. But when you see it, if you guys do check it out, once you see that and then what happens at the end, you're like, screw this movie, kind of. Like, this is weird film school bullshit kind of creative decisions. But it's a good movie. I liked it, even if it has a lot of flaws. But that was one. And then I know, Mike, you mentioned The Family Plan. I saw Arthur the King, which is the same director and Mark Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think that I would recommend for the group, especially if, like, for those who have kids, because it's a really engaging story. It's about a Mark Wahlberg who is going on these, like, Iron Man-like challenges, and he goes to South America. And it's based on a true story of how, you know, he has this, like, one last chance to sort of win this Iron Man challenge that he's been trying to do his whole life. And he's, like, in his 40s. He's trying to start a new life with his family.
It's competitive racing as a team, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't sure what to call it. I don't know if it's like a competitive. Yeah, I guess it is competitive racing.
Yeah.
Where you have to, it's running, boating, zip lining, horseback riding, skiing. It can be a bunch of different things. That's where I thought, like, Patrick, I thought it was something Patrick would do, actually.
But yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Okay.
Is he the main character, though, or is the dog?
You come for Mark Wahlberg, but you stay because of the dog. Okay. Because right. Arthur, the dog. Okay, so we had some really good dog performances recently, like Snoop when Anatomy of a Fall. This dog is so good. Like, I don't know how these dogs and animals can give such great performances. There's, like, I'm not a crier. You all know this. I'm really honestly not. I almost cried, like, 3 times during this movie because this dog just tugs at your heartstrings. Like, you don't know what's going to happen to this dog. And just the brutality and We get a lot of point of view shots from the dog. And yeah, just, oh, it's so, as a dog lover, it spoke to me quite a bit. The movie's kind of melodramatic, but I'm glad I saw it. And people really seemed to love it in the theater when I was checking it out. But I recommend it.
You said, how do they get performances from dogs? Oh, don't go on YouTube and watch how they made A Dog's Purpose.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
Oh, yeah, no, you don't do that. Like, what is that website? DoesTheDogDie.com?
Oh, or, yeah. Like, or the, how they made Milo and Otis, that dog and cat movie, was basically the same thing as Incredible Journey, but they filmed it in southern China or something like that. But they went through a lot of Otises.
Way to bring it down. He's telling a story about a good movie, Hector, and you just kind of brought his big wet blanket in on the nice recommendation.
It actually was good.
All right.
And then I saw Immaculate, which was not good, really. Ooh. I mean, it was okay. That was the one with Sydney Sweeney, where she's like a nun. So she doesn't know Italian, but goes to Rome, barely knows language. And then she's basically trying to become a nun, and weird shit happens, and something happens in the third act that really is totally different from anything you saw for the first hour. Lots of plot holes. She's good in it, though. I will say that. And there's some good, scary moments, but this type of story's been done dozens of times and better off with other better writers and directors. So Immaculate was okay at best. And then the last one, I just actually came from the screen in, but I have to say it because I think this is just like, this is not a nitpick normally to watch. One of my friends wanted to see this movie called, I can't believe I'm going to talk about this on this podcast, Ordinary Angels with Hilary Swank. And the only reason why I agreed to go see this was because I heard it got good reviews and I like Hilary Swank. She's got 2 Oscars. She's doing better in life than I am. But what really piqued my interest was that Kelly Furman Craig, who did The Edge of 17 and Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, co-wrote the screenplay with, of all people, Meg Tilly. Actress.
They got her out of a poker table? Actress,
yeah, like from like The Big Chill and Agnes of God.
No, that's Jennifer Tilly, Hector.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, Jennifer Tilly's the one that's on a poker table trying to...
Because you have Bound on your mind. Sorry, Nick.
I do.
No, it's all good. The reason why I was so apprehensive to see it was because it's one of those like faith-based movies. It's released by Lionsgate, but it's based on a true story. It's about this hairdresser who helps this father whose wife passed away, I believe, from cancer. And she's trying to raise money because the little girl has like a terminal rare disease and he has like a lot of debt. And, you know, it's just like one of those movies where I'm sure it's not original per se, the way it's told and the story itself, but like, it's so sad to just see people go through so much pain and
Watching shit movies. That's no one deserves
this was
that.
Actually good. Like, I don't watch these kind of movies normally, but I thought it was actually really good. It had a good message. It did not have as much Christian iconography and tones as much as I thought either. Like, there are if you look for it, but it's not like they're beating you over the head like in Immaculate, like the devil's movie. No, I'm kidding, because it is like a horror movie. But I thought it was really well done. And the guy who is in it is Reacher, the guy who plays Reacher on that Amazon show.
Alan Ritchson.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was good at it. I mean, I'm not going to like just dismiss it because it's not usually the type of movie I would normally go see, but it was worth it, though.
See, but that's one of those movies, though. I don't know if they have these up in Canada or not, but it's I call it a bus movie because what religious organizations do, because it was ranked in the top 5 for like 2 or 3 weeks in the States. But because faith-based organizations go and buy all the tickets.
Yeah, the mega churches just scoop up. That's what happened with, what was that last one that we were...
Sound of Freedom.
Sound of Freedom. Oh, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The same thing. We're like, how are they getting all this at box office? And Woody's right. It's mega churches eat up all that box office gets and then just, I don't know, pan them out. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. They buy the tickets so we don't have to
of
them.
Right.
Yeah, but then you end up seeing 2 sequels later. Sound of Freedom 2.
I feel like this one, like I said, you wouldn't even really know unless you knew that going in. But I feel like it actually did tell a good story. And it's only rated PG, so it's definitely something for the whole family. Even the believers or non-believers, it's all, you know, I think everyone could take something good from it. But, you know.
A religious movie rated R. Yeah. I would like to see that.
Passion of the Christ.
Oh, yeah, yeah, shit. You got me. You got me. Yeah.
Did you guys see the trailers for either The Crow or Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice?
No.
No.
Not yet? Okay.
I've avoided them on purpose.
Yeah, okay. Me too.
Because I have no interest in either.
Oh, honestly. Just the opposite. I want to see.
You want to see The Crow?
The Crow one I'm a little worried about, but I'm going to still see Beetlejuice because it's Michael Keaton. And again, that's my wheelhouse growing up, guys. So that's
the
my
teaser doesn't really show anything. So
Michael Keaton did himself some favors at the Oscars.
Oh, that was brilliant. And you know, yeah, he was dressed as Adam West, right?
It was awesome.
I agree, Woody. I love Michael Keaton. I'll go see anything Michael Keaton's in. He's such a great actor.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Okay, so my turn. My first one would be Eileen. I don't know if you've heard of that one from last year.
I know the song where she's being told to move.
Not that. Not that one? Either.
Okay.
It stars Thomasine McKenzie from Last Night in Soho. And Anne Hathaway and Shea Whigham. Okay, so set in 1960s Massachusetts. So Hector's part of town.
I was there for it.
The story trail in the 60s?
Nope.
Okay, just checking. Okay, set in 1960s Massachusetts, the story trails the relationship between two women working at a juvenile detention facility. I went in completely blind. I knew nothing about that movie. And it was a very pleasant surprise because it takes quite a turn at some point. I really enjoyed it. That's Eileen, director William Oldroyd, and based on a 2015 novel. Check it out. I recommend it. Okay, next one would be, and Nick, you mentioned it earlier a few minutes ago. Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. Okay, so it's got two things that I usually hate in movies. Religion and teenagers. And somehow, I liked it quite a bit. I really liked it.
Yes.
There were tons of stuff that I couldn't relate to because I never had those experiences, of course. And I don't have kids either. But still, it was very engaging. And yeah.
My heart is so full right now because I was fully prepared to say that movie was shit.
No, it was honestly, it was quite good. Guys, have you seen it?
Not yet.
No, I mean, I've read the book.
Did you like it?
The book is brilliant, but I don't know the movie. But with the book being that, like, Judy Blume is a fantastic writer, I think it would be hard to screw up the movie. But, I mean, I'm sure Hollywood could find a way. But
yes.
This was actually one of my 10 favorite movies of last year. Like, legitimately, because I feel like it's a movie that it takes place in 1970, but it doesn't feel dated in any way.
That's true.
And also, the performances are so good. Kathy Bates and especially Rachel McAdams, like, shout out to her. She was robbed of this award season, in my opinion. And I think the fact is that it's a movie that I think what's so special about Kelly Fern Craig is that she also did Edge of 17. She has sort of mastered with these two movies how to depict teenagers in a more realistic way, that they're not like caricatures of
like that
age group. And I feel like these are actually human beings, and even if you're not Jewish or WASPy like they are in that movie, like, you could still understand the universal themes in it. And
yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy you liked it, because that movie, I wasn't expecting anything out of it when I saw it last year in theaters, and it won me over completely.
Yeah, because I was dreading the religion part, to be honest. But now they managed to reach a balance. You know, they don't overdo it. So, no, yeah, well done. Okay, so the next one would be, I don't know if you guys heard of that one. It's a French movie, La Nuit du 12. In English, it's The Night of the 12th. It's from 2022, a mystery thriller film. It's inspired by a true story. It is a murder investigation. It takes place in the region of Grenoble in southeast-ish France. And for the 23 Caesars, the French Oscars, it got 10 nominations and it won 6 of them, including Best Movie, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor, and Most Promising Actor. Okay, so it is a murder investigation. And what I liked about it, it felt authentic because you see the murder investigation team working together, and it really felt like they were real people, and you would see them interact with witnesses and, you know, asking questions, and fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And Grenoble, the Winter Olympics in 1968 took place there. And the scenery, because the city itself is flat, but it's surrounded by mountains. And the landscape and the visuals are amazing. Just when they drive like from point A to point B, you get some awesome views of the mountains surrounding the city. It's great. And yeah, acting is fantastic. Writing is fantastic. I really recommend it. And I don't think it's available to stream for free, but you can rent it on Amazon or, you know, Apple or wherever, both in the US and Canada. I cannot recommend it enough. It's called The Night of the 12th.
It looks like they have a special right now where it's only $1.99 to rent it. So
it's $2 well spent. Okay, so my next one would be from Michael Mann, Ferrari. I liked it, but it's flawed, I'd say. But Adam Driver carries the movie because just by his physical presence, you know, he is always walking into a conversation, walking out of a conversation, things move around him. But as good as a casting as Driver is, I don't know what Shailene Woodley does in that movie.
No one knows what she does.
Yeah, because the three main characters, none of them are Italian. Like, you have Driver, who's American, Penelope Cruz, Spanish, and Shailene Woodley, American as well. And Patrick Dempsey as well, Jack O'Connell. It's like Michael Mann made an effort not to cast any Italians in that movie for some reason. But I enjoyed it still. I would recommend it if you like Michael Mann's movies, because otherwise it would be just okay, I think.
So that's a really sad story about how that movie was made, because the screenwriter Troy Kennedy Martin, which you might know from like The Italian Job and Kelly's Heroes, and he did shows like that. He was going to do this movie like 20 years ago,
yeah,
and he died. And then I think that it sort of like Michael Mann sort of took it on almost as like a tribute to him in many ways to finish that movie.
I didn't know that.
Penelope Cruz was excellent in that movie. Shailene Woodley, terrible.
Okay, so yeah, Penelope Cruz, we all know what she looks like. It's impossible for her to look bad.
She's awesome.
But do you know the real person, what she looked like, Ferrari's wife? She does not look like Penelope Cruz. Let me put it that way. Jesus.
That's like, if I remember that movie, The Lonely Hearts with John Travolta, yes, and then they made Salma Hayek. And if you ever look at the character that Salma Hayek plays, looks nothing. Okay. Like that.
There you
like,
go.
Far not. That's a Google image for later. If
you, but there you go.
Yeah, completely different than when they cast her as Salma Hayek. I was like,
yes. I liked it. All things considered, I liked it. Okay, so my next to last, but my last one was Roadhouse. So this would be my last one. We covered it, so it's fine. But we can crap all over it for a few more minutes if you guys want. Okay, so yeah, my last one would be Dream Scenario with Nicolas Cage. black comedy from last year. I loved it, but I thought the last act didn't quite stick the landing, because I'm avoiding spoilers. They could have gone in a different direction and they could have cranked it up to 11. And it would have been amazing. But instead, it kind of not fizzled out, but...
meanders?
Yeah, a little bit, like in the last 20 minutes. Because they could have gone full, think the ending of Carrie. You know? It could have gone extreme. But I really liked it, all things considered. And Nicolas Cage is fantastic in it. Yeah, absolutely. Have you guys seen it?
Yeah, I saw that in a theater with a kind of a crowded house. I will say, Patrick, has probably one of the best fart scenes.
Yes.
In recent memory.
Yeah, I laughed out loud at that.
Where is it in the fart universe, though? Like the car universe?
Come on.
We don't need to go down that road. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah, we don't have to go there.
Are we out of gas?
Yeah. And once more...
I will say, though, like, he's better than the movie is, because I agree, like, I thought the final act, it was very preachy, and it's trying to do too much, and I think that there's a lot of good things happen in this movie, and it's quite thought-provoking, like, in terms of, like, about celebrity.
Yeah, that's true.
And, like, cancel culture, and, like, suburban life, and academia. Like, there's a lot of good stuff in there, but I feel like it's almost like this A24 type of problem sometimes where they almost try to put too much into like an hour and 30 minute movie. You're like, just stick with what you were doing. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. And finally Roadhouse, but yeah, we talk about that unless you guys want to add anything about Roadhouse. No, all good.
Nope. Still sucks.
It still sucks. Yes. Nothing has changed. Okay, so guys, let's wrap up with this. Where can we reach you online, Hector?
I'm still on Twitter for who knows how long. But yeah, at Classic Hexagon on Twitter, at Classic Hexagon on Instagram and Threads. And I'm on Facebook, but I'm not really on Facebook. So that's more for family bullshit.
Okay, thank you. Nick, what about you?
Sure, you can follow me at Rockin' Retropod on pretty much any social media platform, like Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. And also check out my other podcast that I have with my friend Jordan Racing, Needle Drops. So that's at a Needle Drops Pod on almost every social media account as well. And thank you, Patrick, by the way, for letting me talk about movies and have me on the show.
No problem. Always a pleasure. Thank you. Woody, what about you?
You can follow me on Instagram at The Wooden Chef if you want to see cool pictures of food.
All right. Thank you. Mike, what about you?
On Instagram and Threads at Pickies, P-I-C-I-E-S, with filters. So yeah, Pickies with filters, all one word.
Awesome. Thank you. Guys, you can drop us a line at EETFpod on Twitter, Instagram, not Threads. So, okay. And EETFpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, guys, for your patience. And your hot takes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Always welcome. And thank you, listeners. We will catch you on the next one. Thanks.